From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, tomorrow we'll get our Heritage Foundation update along with our Friday Financial Update with John Moore Associates. Brian Cochran's going to join us for a short segment. Information about a couple other local activities you want to know about. Be tuned in tomorrow on ABQ Connect. Hey, guys, this Friday is the beginning of the Man Up Conference at Calvary Church Albuquerque on Osuna, and that will include a hearing from Nate Heitzig of Calvary Church, Nathan Finocchio, he's the founder of Theos U, and Major League Baseball great Daryl Strawberry. Many of us are very familiar with his accolades, whether it's a World Series champion with New York Mets or the New York Yankees, or NL Rookie of the Year 1983, All-Star selection for 1984 through 1991. That is quite an accomplishment. His number 18 jersey, retired from the Mets, and he's a member of the New York Mets Hall of Fame, which I'm actually really surprised he's not in the Hall of Fame in general in Cooperstown. So at any rate, you know, all those accolades, and he'll I'm sure be the first to tell you, compared to his relationship with Christ and what that means to him, there's no comparison. So I'll have some great encouragement for you. Obviously, there'll be some great worship music along with the teaching and prizes, including a New York Jets helmet signed by Joe Namath, a Blackstone griddle, and more. Tickets for the whole weekend, guys, are only $10. So go to calvarynm.church to find out more about the Man Up Conference. Starts this Friday at 5:30 and then picks up Saturday morning at 9 o'clock at Calvary Church on Osuna, west of Jefferson. A full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, thanks for coming in. Your monthly visit, always welcome.
Always good to be with you, Steve.
We have a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, well, it is that time of year, that time every 4 years, quite frankly, when we have a presidential election. But of course, here at the Rio Grande Foundation, here in New Mexico, we care not just about the presidency, but U.S. Senate, members of the House of Representatives, the New Mexico legislature, and so much more.
And you'll find out a lot about that and find scorecards and what have you at RioGrandeFoundation.org, and a lot of the content we're getting today is from errorsofenchantment.com. You can go there to find Paul's blog. And you mentioned the presidential election. I actually watched the Republican National Convention and a good portion of the Democratic National Convention. Did you watch both?
You are a more durable man than I. I watched some of the Republican convention. I was very excited and interested to see Trump because that was right after the assassination attempt.
Yeah.
And he gave a very detailed and vivid response report on what exactly happened. That seems like ancient history, like a Sumerian hieroglyph at this point.
And I think both of us at that point had even commented that, you know, although we were in the midst of the election, you know, rigmarole, that there was still a lot of time between that time and the election and plenty of things. And since then, Paul, lots has happened. Like you said, that was just before the conventions. And since then, now we've seen both conventions, and we've seen our governor at the Democratic National Convention up on stage.
Well, we also saw the replacement of Joe Biden since the assassination attempt. It's been quite a lot going on. In terms of the Democrats, I was at a convention in Arizona, a conference for my work. Enjoying that lovely August heat in Phoenix, about 110 each day. I did get the chance to see Joe Biden speak And it was very uncomfortable because the man kind of just yells, and having somebody on television yell at you for...
Was it that angry yelling delivery? That,
yeah, it was not not fun. So anyway, yes, Michelle Lujan Grisham spoke at the Democrats' convention. And I think that this is disqualifying for Kamala Harris. Unfortunately, New Mexico is looked over often in American politics, but it was just 1 year ago in August that the governor actually tried to overturn the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution with the stroke of a pen via an executive order. The governor told us here in Bernalillo County that we could not carry a gun, either concealed or open carry. And she tried to do that without so much as the act of the legislature on any of it. And even David Hogg, a notorious anti-gun activist, said, you know, there's no amendment, the Second Amendment exemption to the Constitution. You can't just put an executive order. I don't even think you could have done, you could do it legislatively, but that's one of many things. I would also say that based on the amount of money that this state has, the fact that we can't get out of dead last in education, the fact that we continue to struggle so much as a state despite having all of these financial resources, it is an indicator that our governor is simply not willing or able to bring prosperity or create prosperity, help businesses create prosperity, I should say, in New Mexico. And that attitude, that lack of skill should reflect on Kamala Harris because, you know, these conventions, they're like a big party. All the political who shakers, movers, they get to show up and hang out with their friends. And of course, they get to give a lot of speeches. And having people around you is one way that the voters can understand what you, the candidate, actually stand for. And so I'm just here in the corner waving a bunch of red flags about what Michelle Lujan Grisham has to say. And, you know, if, as we saw in the debate a couple nights ago, Kamala Harris claims that she doesn't want to ban guns, she doesn't want to do this or that, well, then why are you having somebody who tried to overturn the Second Amendment right here in New Mexico speak at your convention? I think that shows where her true thoughts are. And I wish Mr. Trump had made those cases. I wish more people outside of New Mexico, even inside New Mexico, were willing to talk about these kinds of issues.
Well, and talking about the Constitution, as you brought up, and, you know, the American election process, you know, we all, you know, typically you tune into the convention, you get to find out who won the primary.
Yep.
History was made. You know, one was pushed aside, and with zero votes, someone is now the Democratic presidential candidate. So,
yeah, that's obviously uncharted territory, and it's the way things have been done. I definitely encourage everybody out there to focus on this election and every election from a policy perspective. I think this is one of those great divides that we're seeing between Republicans and Democrats, is that Republicans tend to look beyond the personality and the vibes and go to, how is this person going to affect my bottom line? How are they going to affect my freedoms, the Constitution, my religious liberties, those kinds of things? A lot of Democrats, certainly not all, but enough to be the dominant force in that party, seem to focus on personality and, oh, this is the first woman or the first black woman or the first black Indian woman, whatever it may be. They focus on these kinds of immutable characteristics that
distractions
are not. Yeah, they're not what we're going to care about 2 years into a Kamala Harris administration.
So, Paul, and I'll probably ask this question tomorrow with Genevieve Wood at the Heritage Foundation. I'm kind of curious. Because you do a lot of research, and you know, both sides of the aisle, I think, often just grab onto things that support what whatever their agenda is, and they move forward without a lot of research. And, you know, and I mean, we saw that during the debate.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that not only were, you know, either we were being lied to or they were wrong, but not only from the candidates, but from the moderators.
Right.
Now, I don't really want to go so much into that today, but you are an expert at research. And how would you encourage the voter, which, by the way, I think we're 53 days. Yeah, we're 53 days away from November 5th. If you're not registered to vote, please do register. And once you're registered, please plan to vote either when early voting is available or on election day. But Paul, as we go between now and these next 53 days, how would you encourage the KLYT listener to do some research instead of just, you know, jumping on the latest knee-jerk story?
It's tough. It is really tough out there because the media is not going to tell you the truth. Now, local media are somewhat better than the national media, but if you Google some topics that were discussed or look at the ABC moderators, they did not fact check Kamala Harris at all on basic things. She's flip-flopped on, or at least theoretically flip-flopped. It's hard to tell what her real stance is on something as critical as fracking, the process by which oil and gas producers break apart shale deep underground using a mixture of fluids and essentially various technologies that allows them to target exactly where that oil and gas is and make sure that they get oil and gas every single time they drill a well and open up vast new supplies, which is what's happened in New Mexico. That's why we have the budget surplus. But of course, the Very Fine People hoax with Charlottesville, a lot of other points in the debate. Kamala Harris claimed to be a racial unifier, but she called Joe Biden a racist 4 years ago for opposing a busing policy that she made a big deal about. And it's not easy. It is not easy. But if you put this stuff in Google, you will probably not get a correct answer because right. The media is quick to poo-poo everything. Now, I don't know what's going on in Springfield, Ohio, with regard to Haitian migrants and animals around the parks, but I've seen a lot. You can find interviews and discussions on many topics on X.com.
Well, and when it came up during the debate, the moderator mentioned that he spoke to the city manager. Now, listen, city manager, we're going to be talking about economic development here in a little bit, but that's someone responsible for economic development and making things better in the city. They're not going to volunteer to you the issues that they're having in the city that are going to keep businesses from wanting to come to their town to do business. So that was the wrong person to ask.
And absolutely. And that's one that I would chalk up into strategically, Trump should not have talked about that at all. It's just there's not enough verifiable facts one way or the other. So I think it was a bad idea to discuss that. Now, there are other facts on the ground in other areas that in the debate that are clearly specified.
And what he going there, mm-hmm. I think what he should have done is talked about 20,000
exactly
Haitians being boom dropped in a city the size, what was it, 60,000?
60,000 people, yeah.
Population. I mean, that is going to drastically change the way that the whole city, metropolitan area operates.
Absolutely. And that is reasonable for Trump to bring up. And it's something that you don't have to verify. Some facts that are quite frankly very much in flux. Okay. But there are interviews that you can find on another issue post abortion up till 8-9 months. First and foremost, New Mexico is one of those states that has no restrictions whatsoever. I don't know what, if any, rules are in place regarding botched abortion survivors. But I know that Tim Walz repealed a law in the state of Minnesota that specifically protected those babies. So Trump was right on that. He was specifically fact-checked by the ABC monitors. They were 100% wrong. And that is something that I actually think that Trump did a pretty good job of highlighting. He said, look, you want to talk about all these extreme cases on your end of the case. Let's talk about 6 month, 7 month, 8 month, and 9 month abortions and this post-birth issue, which, while admittedly rare, it only has to happen once for it to be a legitimate thing. And the media, the moderators, are trying to hide this or cover it up completely. And so, yeah, I don't know, man, because I do this stuff on the daily. Follow it regularly, and I look and try to dig through all these sources. Now, I don't.
Well, you just mentioned, Paul, part of probably what makes it effective, what you do, is you said, I go through all these sources.
Yeah.
You're not using a single one on the left, a single one on the right, a one that seems to be neutral. It seems like you're fact gathering from multiple sources to get the information as best you can, the information. And that's just something we all can practice.
Yeah. And Rio Grande Foundation and Heirs of Enchantment, you will find a great deal of information there, predominantly about state and local. We do dive into the federal. I mentioned Michelle Lujan Grisham's appearance on stage at the DNC, but there are other policy matters relating to even on the abortion issue, even though our focus is on the economy and the education system right here in New Mexico. But when you have situations like the governor eagerly tweeting about how excited she was to go down to Las Cruces and help them break ground on their new $10 million taxpayer-financed abortion clinic, that is something that is, A, very simple and easy to fact-check, and it's real, and it's our money that's being used for that facility.
And you can find these stories on the web. Remember to go to errorsofenchantment.com. We're going to take a quick break. Before we do so, I want to remind you we're spending the full hour today with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Lots of places where you can find the work that Paul's doing. RioGrandeFoundation.org. errorsofenchantment.com, and don't forget about the podcast, tippingpointnm.com. You'll find information at that site as well. We're going to come back and cover more with Paul Gessing right after the break on ABQ Connect. Hey, some new programming that has already actually started on KLYT. Well, and there's more coming, by the way. We'll keep you appraised of that. But you've probably caught Bless Israel over the weekends. It airs on Saturdays and Sundays. And details about that from the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, you can find on our website. Go to klyt.fm, klyt.fm. On the homepage there in the Action Center, find the banner for International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. And they're providing impactful stories, testimonials, and more on these reports of the life-saving work that's being done by the organization over the weekend. Then also, Study the Word weekend. Now, you can hear Study the Word each evening at 8:30 with Pastor Tom Keller of Calvary Chapel, Lebanon in Pennsylvania. It's verse-by-verse teaching. You don't want to miss that during the week. But on Saturdays at 5 p.m., you can hear the weekend edition. And then, of course, a daily walk heard daily on KLYT with Pastor John Randall. That weekend edition of Daily Walk is now heard Sundays at 7:30 in the morning. So be listening for that as you head into the weekend, and look for our lineup at klyt.fm. Peruse our website, not only our website, but our Facebook page. Really been trying to boost the attention we're giving there to provide really content that you can use and share with others. So go to klyt.fm, surf around a little bit, and check us out on Facebook, KLYT883, if you're looking for us on Facebook. Paul Gessing is our guest for the full hour today on ABQ Connect. He's here from the Rio Grande Foundation. Heirsofenchantment.com is where you'll find the blog and a lot of the content that we're talking about today. And, of course, Paul has a podcast going, Tipping Point in New Mexico. Or what is it? TippingPointNM.com.
That's exactly right. It's going great. We've had a few guests recently, some of whom I chatted with in Arizona. Like I said, it was a state policy network. It was the annual convention of the kind of broadly free market conservative think tanks got together. I met former Governor Doug Ducey down there, got to have a nice conversation with him about how we can bring common sense ideas like he enacted when he was in the governor's mansion in Arizona to New Mexico. And he kind of said, you know, we just got to get better people elected in that state. Yeah. And, but he did offer to help in any way he could. So that was great. But yeah, I talked to somebody from the Commonwealth Foundation. They did a 50-state report on public sector bargaining laws. So how do states interact with the public sector unions? New Mexico, no surprise. It's not pretty. We're not the very, very worst, but I think we're a D-. We're not an F. But you know, if we want to improve the quality of our government here and quality of life in New Mexico, there are some very simple solutions.
And hey, I'll tell you, as far as trying to fix things and running into politicians, I was at the Folds of Honor banquet last Friday night and ran into Mayor Greg Hull from Rio Rancho, and I actually stopped to just tell him how much I don't even live in Rio Rancho, and I appreciate what he's doing up there.
Yeah, Rio Rancho is a little bit of a success story in New Mexico in terms of its relatively strong approach to government and trying to do things right. But you know, they are ultimately held back by the policies in Santa Fe and the legislature, the governor, and what they choose to do. So,
well, our first segment, we talked a little bit about abortion.
Yeah.
And our governor has been busy as far as, what, you know, you mentioned the $10 million abortion clinic on the border, and I don't know if we got to it in our last segment, and we mentioned it in a show prior, but the amount of money being spent to promote the abortion clinic, it's a considerable amount of money.
Well, you've got $10 million in capital outlay dollars, our tax dollars, being allocated to build the facility. And then the governor has embarked upon something called Free to Provide, which is this ad campaign that she's undertaken with, again, our tax dollars in Texas. And the idea being to promote the idea of doctors and medical providers coming to New Mexico because we are a very, very radical pro-choice, pro-abortion state.
Or a destination. I mean,
right. It's, well, the governor, I'm looking at an article from, I believe, the Pinion Post, in which she talked about the New Mexico being the underground railroad for abortion, which is a pretty interesting way to put things. But she did call it that in a recent talk. So, you know, this governor obviously has bought into the very radical pro-choice, pro-abortion rhetoric, and she's using our tax dollars, whether it's to build the actual facility or to advertise. We've found $500,000 is what the ad campaign is effectively costing us, the taxpayers, to run in other states to theoretically attract doctors. I really don't think it's about attracting doctors. I think it's 100% about her patting herself on the back and saying what a great job she's doing.
Well, I will say that I'm not interested in my tax dollars being used for either the abortion clinic or advertisements to draw medical people here to get work there or to bring families here to exterminate babies. So that's just one part of what's going on in Santa Fe. Another article that you wrote, Paul, and this was no surprise to me, but it's easy to say New Mexico, yeah, it's a poor state. I mean, it's, but New Mexico, according to the headline in Errors of Enchantment, New Mexico is actually the poorest state in the nation.
Yeah. So we are consistently, and the Census Bureau does the best analysis of poverty by state, and they report on it every year. What was surprising to me is that if you look at, according to this chart that I found, which puts together data from 3 years running and averages it out, so 20, 21, and 22, New Mexico actually is the highest poverty state. 18.2% is the poverty rate. That narrowly beats out Mississippi at 17.8, and really kind of beats everybody else at, if you're talking about high poverty rates. If you're talking about low poverty rates, you can go to the state of Utah. You don't have to go very far. 7.1% is the rate in Utah. And
even our neighbors to the north.
Yeah, Colorado's relatively low poverty. Now, it is fair to say that some states that have massive immigration levels are going to naturally not perform quite as well, because, simply put, you have people showing up from foreign countries with few job skills, may not know the English language. New Mexico is not a state that even has that excuse relative, certainly, to Texas or Arizona and some of the states surrounding us. So whether you can say, oh, well, immigration changes that dynamic a bit, New Mexico can't really use that as a crutch. So we need to do better, and we have the wherewithal, the financial resources to do much better, but we just haven't done it.
Paul, another topic. Let me see. Actually, you know what? Before we go to the next topic, I'll tease it, oil and gas, you know, it's been something that's kind of continued to provide a surplus for us. But is that going to continue? We'll kind of take a closer look at that when we come back. We're visiting with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. That's riograndefoundation.org, errorsofenchantment.com, and tippingpointnm.com. The final one there, the website for the podcast. You can catch up with Paul there as well. But we're going to come back with more right after the break on ABQ Connect. Full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. We'll get right back to our conversation with Paul here momentarily. Do want to remind you that coming up this weekend, Saturday, September 14th at 9 in the morning, there'll be a car show out at Calvary Chapel New Harvest in Los Lunas. That's right on Main Street in Los Lunas. Starts at 9 o'clock this Saturday morning. A lot of family fun. If you want to find the details about that, go to CalvaryNHLL.com for New Harvest Los Lunas. CalvaryNHLL.com. And Paul, often on this show, and for months, if not years, you know, we connect several of the blogs that you write to the surplus in New Mexico that's there, primarily due to gas and oil.
Right.
And, you know, as we probably even asked it before, but, you know, man, does that just go on forever and ever? How does that work? And you did write a blog about it. What did you have to say?
Yeah, well, in the last few years, we've had budget surpluses, thanks to the oil and gas industry, of $3.5 billion in a given year. And one of my favorite economics principles is put forth by Herb Stein, who, you know, Ben Stein, of course, makes all the headlines because he had that famous scene, Bueller. Well, Herb Stein was his father, and his economic principle was things that cannot go on forever won't. I know that's a simple thing, but you can't have $3.5 billion surpluses every single year, partially because government spends the money, and partially because you can only keep growing anything, including the oil and gas industry, so much. So what are we at now? $650 $1 million is the current estimated surplus when the legislature gets to Santa Fe in January. That is still a fantastic, amazing, wonderful number that can allow lots and lots of good things to happen in New Mexico's economy, tax cuts, tax reform, all kinds of different things. And it does give me some optimism currently based on the governor maybe sees the light a little bit and she might be moving in a better direction on the economy. But there's a lot of money still available, even though we're not talking about billions of dollars in a single year in surplus revenue.
You know, Paul, I'm going to throw this out. I don't know if you know anything about this, but you're a pretty smart guy. So went to the grocery store this week and actually saw some decrease in prices there. And I know that President Biden, I think, dipped into the national oil again and expected to see gas prices drop some. But the thought on that being that, well, yeah, soon enough they'll go right back up. But economically, is stuff getting better either in New Mexico or nationally, or is stuff being done to it's kind of along the lines, hey, the president's coming to visit, make sure that he doesn't see any of the homeless.
Well, let's talk nationally as a starting point. So inflation has slowed in terms of its growth. Now, it is important to understand that when you talk about inflation slowing or going down, you're not actually necessarily talking about all the prices or broad array of prices. You're talking about the rate of increase in inflation has gone down. So if you were growing at 8 or 9% as we were for a while there, and then you go down to 3 or 4%, you still have to consider that you grew 8% and now you maybe grew 3 or 4% on top of that. But there are going to be wide variations in price differences. For example, a plus and a minus when we talk about the oil and gas industry right now is I just filled up my tank down the road. Prices of gas at the pump are lower than they have been for a while. I'm not sure why they're not lower than that, because the price of a barrel right now has dropped to somewhere around $67. So I suspect that there's some refining backlogs and other possibilities that have kept those prices higher. Other states were seeing lower prices for gasoline, including neighboring Texas. So I don't know exactly what's causing that, because that gets into very localized forces and refinery capacity and that kind of thing. But gasoline and fueling up your car is definitely more reasonable than it had been for quite some time. So that's one of many positives. And of course, that does filter in through the economy and makes things better. So I don't think the economy is in spectacular shape. In fact, recently, CPI, Consumer Price Index, aka inflation, came in higher than the Federal Reserve wanted. And so there's a lot of consternation on Wall Street about, well, are we going to see the rate cut that we wanted, or is it going to be a modest rate cut? So there's still a lot of issues in the American economy. And, you know, when you see the presidential debate, you see the conversation about that. Yet again, Trump missed an opportunity to really hammer on inflation and the state of the economy right out of the chute. Kamala was asked about, are you better now than you were 4 years ago? And what we got was word salad, and Trump didn't take the kill shot on her from a policy perspective. He let that one kind of hang out there.
Agreed. As a matter of fact, her response started with, I was raised in a mill.
Yeah. I was a young woman once.
Yeah. Okay. So as far as economics, another article we want to touch on before we go to the break is one you wrote about a new appointment in regards to New Mexico's head of economic development. How's that going to impact us?
Yeah, well, this is the thing I just alluded to that gives me some hope. For example, just last session, the 2024 session, earlier this year, we had a paid family leave bill that would have increased costs a lot on businesses.
Shot it down.
And it got narrowly defeated. Of course, then we had some primary elections in June that seemed to tilt the Democratic Party towards more likely to pass. We'll still see in November whether the Republicans can make inroads in the House specifically and push back on these plans. But the governor tapped Rob Black. He is a very, I think, reasonable person. He headed up the New Mexico Chamber of Commerce, used to be known as ACI, the Association of Commerce and Industry. Rob's been in that position for, I think, close to a decade. I've known him for a long time. He's a reasonable guy. He's not maybe as free market or conservative as I am, but between people who Michelle Lujan Grisham might pick and I might consider, he may be the guy in the state of New Mexico. And his group opposed paid family leave. It opposes a lot of bad policies that have come out of this governor. It supports reform of the gross receipts tax. It supports lowering the tax burden to make our state more friendly to business. So will he, A, be actually relied upon by the governor to, you know, help steer the ship or to actually steer the ship on economic issues? And the thing that I think is most interesting is we just got that special session back in July where the governor kind of moved to the right. She moved to the center on crime, and she tried to pull the legislator, the progressive legislators with her, and they didn't go. They were like a stubborn old mule, and they said, no, we're not going to do anything about crime. Oh, it's too complicated, this, that, and the other. Well, we're going to see whether she or Rob or the combination of the two can move the legislature into a more pro-business, lower tax, more common sense economic policy mode as she moves into her lame duck session. So that is going to be a heck of a challenge for Mr. Black as well as this governor, because she is functionally a lame duck at this point.
Yeah, and although we, you know, you and I would probably like to see someone more conservative appointed, it is kind of almost refreshing to see someone who's in the middle of the road be appointed to those positions. But it'd be interesting to see what, like you said, what happens, especially you know, with where he's going to stand on issues in relation to agreement with the governor. We are visiting the full hour with Paul Gessing of the Rio Grande Foundation. You can go to the website at the Rio Grande Foundation. Now, Paul, is the Rio Grande Foundation website? Yeah, that's where the Freedom Index is.
It is.
And our listeners can go there as we head towards the election and see where your representatives land on, well, their score, essentially.
Yep.
And Paul, for those who go there and see it and don't right away understand what they're looking at, if you could explain that.
Yeah, the Freedom Index is a mechanism to track the votes that are held on the floor in either the House or the Senate in New Mexico's legislature. And if it doesn't get to the floor, it doesn't get rated by the Freedom Index. But the Freedom Index ultimately is an indicator of how your legislators and elected officials are performing when it comes to issues of individual liberty, limited government, personal responsibility, and the basic rule of law and role of government, as opposed to, you know, next shiny object, next spending priority, et cetera, et cetera. And you can go find your individual legislators, your House and Senate members in the New Mexico legislature, and you can find data, not just for the 2023 session, but going back a decade of data. Now, if your legislator's been in office for a decade, well, you can find data for them if for that long. If you have somebody who's relatively new, it'll go back the 2 years or the 3 years or the 5 years that they've been in office. And I encourage folks to check that out.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I guess a single, we're going to take a look at the track record of a judge that got your attention, Paul.
Yeah.
And we'll do that. And you want to read up on it? Well, you can find it at errorsofenchantment.com. We're going to talk about it, though, when we come back from the break on ABQ Connect. Hey, thanks for joining us. Go to KLYT.FM if you're headed out to the New Mexico State Fair. On our homepage, we put a link. We can just click on the logo for the New Mexico State Fair, and it'll bring up the daily schedule. Today's the Gathering of Counties and New Mexico True Day. I also noticed there's a special needs orchestra that played this morning at 10 o'clock. I don't know if they play later in the day. The pig races, of course, those are always fun. And several days you can go down and see that, whether it's wrestling or all kinds of stuff, man. Click on that link and you'll find all kinds of things happening at the New Mexico State Fair. And speaking of special needs, Jeremiah's Place is preparing for their annual fashion show, and that is just around the corner. It's happening September 21st. That's a Saturday at 5:30 in the afternoon at Sheraton Albuquerque Uptown, that's Louisiana and Manal. It's Jeremiah's Place annual spotlight fashion show. If you're not familiar with Jeremiah's Place, they empower adults with intellectual and developmental disability towards independence through traditional and innovative programs, and they believe God has plans for hope and a future for everyone, including the Jeremiah's Place students. Of course, their key verse, there's Jeremiah 29:11, but they'll have an auction and mocktails, a dinner, and all the details you'll find by going to their Facebook page. Search for them on Facebook, and if you want tickets, you go to Grace Church on San Antonio. Their offices are found in the east wing of Grace Church there. Get the tickets for that event coming up on Saturday the 21st. Paul Getzing, our in-studio guest for the remainder of the hour, our full hour today with Paul. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes, Paul. But I don't recall ever... not saying it hasn't happened, but ever seeing a blog posting from you at Errors of Enchantment in regards to a judge?
Yeah, well, this is a little bit of a new area, with crime being one of the real focal points among local policymakers and voters, with the governor calling a special session to deal with crime. I feel like it is very important to first and foremost educate the public, which is what we do, about the ways in which the different political leaders that we elect address or don't address the issues. In my estimation, if we're talking here about Albuquerque, where you're calling the epicenter of the crime problem, and it's a major stumbling block to families moving here, to our economic growth, to just people wanting to go out and to live here, crime is a huge issue. So who is responsible? I put the mayor, his chief of police, DOJ, Department of Justice has us under a consent decree that was put there by the last mayor. So he bears blame as well, not just the current mayor. I do hold the governor and the legislature accountable, but I actually put judges on a higher level of blame than I do the governor or the legislature. And that's why I decided to put this out. The judge in question is a woman named Cindy Leos. And I go through on Errors of Enchantment news stories about specific cases that she has made what I consider, and I would say, if you read them, you will consider questionable cases. But I actually just go to the Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission. Now, this is basically a rubber stamp group for judges because we have very confusing and very hard to decipher laws when it comes to judges. But here's what the New Mexico Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission said. It said, and I'm quoting, Judge Cindy Leo's scores were somewhat mixed when compared to other judges. They went on to say that attorneys and resource staff rated Judge Leo's lower for not always treating all participants equally, for not always displaying fairness and impartiality toward each side of the case. Attorneys gave her lower ratings for not always conducting herself in a manner free from impropriety or the appearance of impropriety. And finally, resource staff felt that the judge does not always behave in a manner that encourages respect for the courts. Now, based on the nature of the body handing her those grades, that is disqualifying, in my opinion, right by itself. Judge Leos is on your ballot. If you're listening in Bernalillo County, she is up for retention. That means she is not running against anyone. She's running against herself, aren't we all? We're all trying to improve based on the previous version of ourselves. Well, she is up for election, and if she doesn't get 57% of the vote, 57, not 50 or 51, she will be unretained. And I believe that enough of the electorate turning out and saying not to return this lady to the bench, not retaining her, would shake up the entire judicial system in our city and our state. That is why we are taking this on.
All right. And, you know, what stood out to me, Paul, what a great resource. And the link is in your blog. The headline for the blog was Judge Cindy Leos' track record makes her ripe for a no vote on retention. In that article, you'll find a link that Paul mentioned for the New Mexico Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission. What a valuable tool before we head out to elections as we, you know, please go find your ballot before you go vote. Please print it. Please know what you're going to vote for before you head into the polls coming up here in 53 days. But what a great resource, Paul. Thanks for sharing that and writing the article. We got a couple minutes. Did you want to touch at all on some of the things our mayor has big plans for downtown?
Well, the reason I told you off air that these are related is because this is another crime-related issue. And I will say and say again that Mayor Keller is not serious about addressing our crime issues in this city. And he recently unveiled a plan to theoretically, he thinks, address crime in the city of Albuquerque downtown. It involves something called a TIF or a TID, which is basically, if you picture a membrane drawn around downtown on a map where a lot of tax dollars that would otherwise go to the city at large stay in downtown, and then those are supplemented by tax dollars from the surrounding area. So it's basically a hidden form of a tax subsidy. That's what a TIF or a TID is. So that's one of the aspects of what the mayor's put forth. The other is a bid. So you have a TID and a bid, or a TIF and a bid. A bid is a business improvement district where the property owners in the downtown area, in this case, accept and adopt through a vote a higher tax rate on themselves, and that they then hire, or a group of people is hired, to clean up and help manage downtown. Now, the question I have, and I believe the answer is a firm no to this, but details are somewhat lacking, but we don't believe that this will actually result in the hiring of police officers or any resource officers that can address the crime issue and get homeless out of rights of way and off the streets of Albuquerque.
Literally off the streets. I mean, yes. I've been down there for things, you know, real close to that park that they cleared out of a while back.
Coronado Park.
Yeah, but I mean, we're literally in the street. They're laying in the street.
Absolutely, and it's a real problem, and until we address that, we're not going to get anywhere. Last thing, we have an event on the Electoral College in support of the Electoral College on October 3rd. That is Thursday, October 3rd. The Electoral College is how we elect presidents in this country.
And we'll get the details and have our announcers be mentioning that. But Paul Gessinger, our guest for the full hour. Paul, thanks so much. We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to ABQ Connect.